Hi, hello, and how are you this week? I am John Shomo, host of the podcast Then and Now. This is our second season, episode number 11. Glad to be with you this week. This week, we will look at facts of the week, anniversaries, birthdays, historical events from the week of May 7 through the 13th. We will examine two or three different topics in the news, from fentanyl to football to 60 Minutes. And then we will have three good questions. We'll answer last week's three good questions, and we'll pose three new ones this week. Thanks to everybody for contributing to that segment. So let's get started, shall we? First of all, facts and birthdays and anniversaries from May 7th through the 13th. May the 7th, 1915. One of the events that led to American involvement eventually in the First World War. A German U-boat sunk the liner, the ship Lusitania, the cruise ship, in the Atlantic Ocean. Over 1,000 people were killed in that incident, and that really riled up the American public. The ship was sailing back and forth between the United States and Great Britain, and there were some Americans on board, a lot more British victims, but that was one of the things that led to our involvement in the First World War. On May 7th, 1945, the Nazis surrendered in Europe, ending World War II's European theater fighting. On May 7th, 1992, the 27th Amendment was ratified, 27th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. That is the last one that has been ratified, so it's been 33 years since we ratified a constitutional amendment. That amendment was written in 1789 and not ratified until 1992. On May 7th, 1933, Johnny Unitas, one of the great quarterbacks in football history, was born. Johnny Unitas passed away in 2002. He led the Colts to their first few championships in the NFL. And a voice and a man we really miss, especially these days in our political world, Tim Russert, the longtime host of Meet the Press, was born May 7th, 1950. He passed away in 2008 in the Washington studios of NBC of a heart attack. His son Luke is a great follow on social media. But Tim Russert, boy, in these political times especially, that is a person and a voice that is really missed, sorely missed by the American public. Moving to May 8th, VE Day was celebrated after the Germans surrendered in 1945. The Beatles' final release of an album, Let It Be, was on May 8th, 1970. It was not their final album that they recorded. Let It Be was the project that led them to the Rooftop concert in London. That was in January of 1969. There was production trouble. They handed it over to a guy who really kind of messed it up a little bit. And long story short, that was their last release. Abbey Road was the last album that they recorded together, and boy, that's a great one. Coca-Cola was invented by a pharmacist in Atlanta, John Pemberton, on May 8th, 1886. Yay. Birthdays include the 33rd President of the United States, speaking of a guy we need now, Harry Truman, born May 8th, 1884 in Independence, Missouri. The plain spoken. Awesome, in my view, president that followed Franklin Roosevelt. He had very, very low marks at the beginning because who could follow FDR? He had very low marks when he left office in terms of his public opinion approval. But as the time has gone by, Harry Truman's presidency looks more and more enviable, let's say. May 8th also marks the birthday of the former Pittsburgh Steeler head coach, Super Bowl winning coach Bill Cowher, who will be, let's see, 68 years old on May 8th. Thank you. Happy birthday, Bill Cowher. On May 9th, the 17th Amendment was ratified. Speaking of amendments, that was ratified in 1913. That allows the voters to directly elect our U.S. senators in the various states. Prior to 1913, state legislators in all the states chose and voted for the senators. The public did not have that vote until the 17th Amendment was ratified, May 9th, 1913. The Food and Drug Administration approved the birth control pill for use in the United States on May 9th, 1960. That's a very revolutionary moment for society, in my view. Birthdays May 9th, include Billy Joel, who will be 76, and the late Tony Gwynn, born May 9th, 1960, the Hall of Famer from the San Diego Padres. Moving to May 10th, a couple of birthdays, a couple of note, one at least locally here. Ara Parseghian, the very successful head football coach at Notre Dame. He coached at Northwestern before that. Ara Parseghian was born in Akron, Ohio on May 10th, 1923. Went to South High School, actually, in Akron. Pat Summerall, the former place kicker and tight end for the New York Giants, turned very successful broadcaster with CBS. Pat Summerall, born May 10th, 1930. Bono, the lead singer of U2, will be 65. And longtime SNL cast member, he's still there, Kenan Thompson, will be 47. On May 11th, Minnesota became the 32nd state, eh? On May 11th, 1858. A couple of Heisman birthdays for you on that date. Matt Leinart, the 2004 Heisman Trophy winner from the University of Southern California. Now a college football analyst on Fox Television. Matt Leinart will be 42. And the 2010 Heisman winner from Auburn, Cam Newton, will be 36. May 12th sees a couple of very important birthdays, in my view. Yogi Berra, 100 years ago on May 12th. Yogi Berra was born. Lawrence Peter Berra in St. Louis, Missouri, was a veteran of D-Day, came back, played for the Yankees. Of all those great Yankee teams that Casey Stengel managed in the 50s and 60s, he said, I don't ever want to play a game without my guy. And his guy was Yogi Berra. And Yogi Berra had some of the famous, the most famous quotes or misquotes, you might want to say, that I've ever heard. Stuff like, nobody ever eats there anymore. It's always too crowded. Things like that. Anyway, happy birthday in heaven, Yogi Berra. Also, no longer with us, but very important nonetheless, George Carlin, the famous comedian, born May 12th, 1937. We could use him right now, too, actually. Last birthday on May 12th, last but certainly not least, first in our house, first in my heart, Tammy Hardgrove Shomo will celebrate her birthday on May 12th. Happy birthday. On May 13th, finally for this week, the English colony at Jamestown, Virginia was established on May 13th, 1607. Pope John Paul II was seriously wounded in an assassination attempt as he rode around Vatican City in the Popemobile on May 13th, 1981. Thankfully, he survived and lived until 2004, I believe. Birthdays on May 13th. Joe Louis, the world champion boxer, buried at Arlington National Cemetery in a very prominent place, by the way. Joe Louis, born May 13th, 1914. Stevie Wonder, I don't know how many Grammy Awards he's won. I can't count them all. Stevie Wonder will be 75. And the host of The Late Show on CBS, Stephen Colbert, will be 61 years old on May 13th. Talmadge High School graduate John Lampley plays in the band on the Late Show every night. You'll see him with the trumpet on the right-hand side as you look at the band. Just a FYI there. Okay, so much for our birthdays and anniversaries for this week. We have three very different, I guess, topics to go over with you this week. Let's start with fentanyl, shall we? Not literally. The Attorney General made some waves this week, I think you could say. Attorney General Pam Bondi speaking about how much fentanyl, if you will, the Justice Department has collected from illegal sellers and so forth on the streets since she has become Attorney General. In a congressional hearing a week or so ago, she claimed that the Justice Department had seized 21 million illegal fentanyl pills, which saved, in her, and this is her number, 21 million lives in the United States. Now, I'm not going to argue a whole lot about that number. That's technically possible. I've been doing a little bit of reading on that. Fentanyl is very, very deadly. If it's pure fentanyl, if one person takes a pure fentanyl pill and has the right mixture of alcohol or whatever, that could kill them. So theoretically, 21 million fentanyl pills could kill 21 million people. I don't know if that's realistic, but let's give her a little bit of slack on that one. Okay, so that was at a congressional hearing. The next day on the platform X, she posted that the Justice Department had seized 22 million fentanyl pills, not 21 million, and that would save 119 million American lives. That's quite a leap from 21 million American lives just the day before. I don't know how you get to that number in any way, shape, or form, but there it was on X. 22 million fentanyl pills could have killed 119 million Americans. No, not really. Then, a couple days later, at a cabinet meeting, and these cabinet meetings right now with President Trump in there, they look more like North Korean level ass kissing to me. They just go around the table and tell President Trump, who's sitting over there, what a marvelous, wondrous, unbelievable person he is, and how all of his policies are working and so well, and pretty soon we'll all be in Shangri-La and stuff. It's just disgusting. But at the cabinet meeting, she said, "Well, Mr. President, I'm happy to report, and listen up, media," as she looked at all the cameras, "that we have recently seized 22 million fentanyl pills. This will save 258 million lives in the United States." Did you get that number? 258 million? That's almost 75% of the American population. By seizing 22 million fentanyl pills, they saved the lives of 75% of us. That's beyond wild, beyond crazy. But everybody in the cabinet room sits there and nods. It's like Alice in Wonderland stuff. Like I said, North Korea level ass kissing. That's really what it is. I don't live in that world where you can just lie and exaggerate so much like that and get away with it on camera. Who's her audience? I've been thinking about that the last couple of days. Who's her audience really? Number one, her audience is Trump. They're all trying to please him in what they say at these cabinet meetings instead of, you know, bringing up hard issues and discussing what really needs to happen. Secondly, I ran across a video the other day of a guy who was interviewed at a Trump rally during the election campaign last year. And I guess this guy is her audience too. They asked him what kind of stuff that he wanted to hear from Trump and hear answered from him in his appearance that day. And the guy said, well, in so many words, said that I want to know why Obama wasn't in the Oval Office on 9/11. I really want to know what his excuse is for that. All right, I gave you a couple seconds there to chuckle at that. Obviously, Barack Obama was not president yet in 2001. I looked it up just to be sure. He was an Illinois state senator in 2001. He was also teaching law at the University of Chicago in Hyde Park. but this guy and millions like him are Trump's fans. And Chi Pam Bondi, addressing the media, as she said, saying 22 million fentanyl pills saved 258 million lives, that guy's going to eat that all up and probably tell his friends, hey, man, Trump's attorney general just saved 258 million lives. It's beyond the looking glass kind of stuff, but here we are. So anyway, that's enough about Pam Bondi and fentanyl, I guess. Second, I do want to follow up on what we talked about last week on 60 Minutes and the fight for a free press and so forth. 60 Minutes, I'm glad to report, did not back down on Sunday. Cue Tom Petty there. They featured a segment on Trump's attacks on law firms. A couple of law firms have kind of bent the knee to him recently. They featured a segment on his attacks on these law firms and some of the law firms that are not kowtowing, if you will, to his point of view. That's wonderful. They really stood up for free press issues and so forth. I'm glad. Ed Murrow would certainly be proud of CBS News and 60 Minutes for that report last Sunday. Good for them. Keep it going, folks. The third topic this week, we'll move to college football. And just FYI, some of you know this, some of you may not. When college football season starts in August, we will resume our sister podcast, if you will, The Fifth Quarter, which is a college football podcast, which we did during the season last year and got some great feedback on, and really enjoyed doing that. We don't have to talk about Trump and Bondi and fentanyl on The Fifth Quarter. But that will be coming again in August. So wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you get Then and Now, you'll be able to get The Fifth Quarter, Season 2, coming again in August. Let's hope that's as a successful season as it was for Ohio State as the first one was. Let's hope. Anyway, the college football news here in the last couple of days. ESPN.com and 11 Warriors are my sources here. The University of Michigan football program has been slapped with some more penalties. It goes back to what was discovered about a year and a half ago, October of 2023 to be exact, that they had been doing illegal scouting, among other things, against future opponents and blatantly violating NCAA rules on things like that. Their head coach, Sherrone Moore, has accepted a 2-game suspension for this coming season for deleting 52 text messages that he had had with Connor Stallions, the Michigan operative in question in the sign-stealing scandal. He's coaching a high school team now near Detroit or something like that. Please remember that the NCAA cited Michigan for 11 violations, 6 of which are known as level 1 violations. Level 1 are the big, serious violations in the eyes of the NCAA. This text message deletion by Sherrone Moore was not one of those 6. It's a level 2 violation, and the university is going to suspend him. He's agreed to a 2-game suspension, not the first 2 games, but the 3rd and 4th games of this coming season. He wants to be able to coach against his alma mater, Oklahoma, in week 2. So they're going to suspend him for the 3rd and 4th games. It's kind of really cheesy, but anyway, that's what it is. There is a committee on infractions, NCAA committee on infractions hearing set for early June, about a month from now, about the serious level 1 violations of the sign-stealing scandal and all related things. Those will be the big things. I do expect some very serious penalties to come down from the NCAA on the Michigan football program. I'm not going to go out on the limb and guess which exact ones they are, but I think Michigan fans will be pretty sore about what happens after that hearing. Anyway, that hearing is set for early June. Also, really interesting, the University of Michigan's president, Santa Ono, resigned on Sunday just after giving the commencement address to take the same position at the University of Florida. Florida is a highly rated academic institution, but leaving Michigan to get to Florida is not exactly a step up. It's not exactly a lateral move. Michigan is a more highly rated academic institution than Florida. They're both good, don't get me wrong, in academics. So we'll see what happens there. I'm looking forward very much to seeing what happens after the hearings on June 6th and 7th and what punishments the NCAA will hand down to the Michigan football program. Probably those would come down in late July or early August, certainly before the season starts next year. And once again, if you are a college football fan like I am, if you're interested in some college football talk and a few predictions each week and so forth, get ready for our Fifth Quarter Season 2, which will be coming in August, wherever you get your podcast. Okay, this podcast particularly. 3 good questions next. First of all, we want to answer the 3 good questions that were posed last week on the podcast. The first one was from me. It was only 6 college football programs have produced 4 or more top picks, in other words, the first player picked in the NFL draft that year. Which programs are they? Here they are in no particular order.
Okay.
Southern California, Notre Dame, Georgia, Oklahoma, Auburn, and Stanford. They each have produced 4 or more number 1 players picked in the NFL draft in any given seasons. Second question was from Jeff Cole. What do the initials of the automobile company BMW stand for in English? I actually got this one right, believe it or not. BMW stands for Bavarian Motorworks. Bavarian Motorworks. And our third question just kind of came up right before the podcast last week, so I threw it in there, because Eugenio Suarez of the Arizona Diamondbacks had hit 4 home runs in a game a couple of days before we recorded last week's podcast versus the Atlanta Braves. The Braves, however, won that game 8-7 in 10 innings. And the question is, how many times out of 19 Has the team of the four-home run hitter lost the game? In other words, there have been 19 occasions in Major League history where a single player hit four home runs in one game. 16 of those times, his team won. Eugenio Suarez was the third time that his team actually lost. The other two were in 1896, Phillies Hall of Famer Ed Delahanty hit four home runs, but the Phillies lost to the Chicago Colts in that game. And in 1986, more recent for a lot of us here, I remember these guys, Bob Horner of the Atlanta Braves hit four home runs in a game against the Montreal Expos, but the Expos won the ball game. I think that game was down at the old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. So now there are three. Eugenio Suarez of the Diamondbacks joins Bob Horner and Ed Delahanty in that very exclusive club. Okay, those last week's questions. Let's pose three more, shall we? The first one is from frequent contributor Pat Riley in New York. Thanks, Pat. Good luck out there. Pat asks, what is the rule when a ball in play in a baseball game hits a broken bat which is lying in the field of play? In other words, batter swings at the pitch, the bat breaks, part of the bat flies onto the field of play in fair territory, and the ball that he hit hits the bat lying there. What's the rule on that? If you have any answers to any of these questions, please get in touch with us at 3goodquestions@gmail.com. That's T-H-R-E-E, goodquestions@gmail.com. It's a great question. Thank you, Pat. We'll answer that one next week. Let's have you guys guess what the answer might be. Just shoot us an email with your guess. Question number two and three are both from Jeff. Question number two, only 10 football schools in Division I have not had at least one losing season since the college football playoff began in 2014. In other words, we're now 10 years plus, I guess 11 seasons, through the college football playoff era. How many schools, 10 schools, have not had at least one losing season in that time period since 2014? How many of those can you name? Here's a hint. Only half of them, five of them, are in the so-called Power Four conferences. That would be the Big Ten, the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12. Five of them are in the other Division One conferences, the Group of Five conferences. So once again, here's the question. Only 10 football schools in D1 have not had at least one losing season since the college football playoff began in 2014. How many can you name? We'll answer that one next week. If you have some guesses, please send us an email. The third question this week is also from Jeff. What are the only two team sports franchises, nicknames, I guess you'd say? Okay, I had to think of the right word there for a second. What are the only two team sports nicknames? For example, Padres, Yankees, Cardinals, whatever. To win a championship in the same sport at both the college and professional levels. In other words, there's only two nicknames that have been carried by a champion in the same sport in both college and professional sports. What would those be? Hopefully I didn't muck that question up too much. Okay, let me try that one more time. What are the only two team sports nicknames to win a championship in the same sport at both the college and professional levels? I'm not sure I even know that one. I might have to take a stab at that one. Again, if you have answers to any of our good questions, please get a hold of us at 3goodquestions@gmail.com. If you'd want to contribute questions like Pat and Jeff have here lately, please do the same. Email us at 3goodquestions, T-H-R-E-E, at gmail.com. That should just about do it for this episode, episode 11 of our season 2 of Then and Now. We want to appreciate and thank those of you who have chosen us to listen. We are listened to all over the globe, believe it or not. It's hard to believe, but that's actually true. So thanks a lot. Tell a friend. Keep us going here. We appreciate it. Thank you again. We are found at Spotify, so make sure you subscribe when you choose us, and you'll get notifications when we show up every week. Thanks again for listening, for tuning in. I'm John Shomo. This is Then and Now. Hope everybody has a great week. Thanks for listening.